old. And Tom, I'm not sure where you want to start with that Elks game. Was it the inefficiency of the offense or the special teams irregularities did you like to start with, Thomas?
Strutty, I mean, what point do you want to start with? And it doesn't go well. I mean, it was ugly all around. So why don't we start with the offense? It just seems like Trevor Harris isn't in sync. I don't know, when it comes to the play calling, it seems like they're not stretching it out down the field. James Wilder Jr. has been one of the bright spots. Unfortunately, when they get into the red zone, they're not doing anything. It's something that kind of hampered them, even under Jason Moss a couple of years ago. So, not good all around, Strud. So, yeah, any point we hit on is probably going to be a downer to talk about. Special teams-wise, you saw the kick return or punt return for a touchdown. It just felt like, even on the defensive side of the thing, of the whole game, it was... Montreal had their way with the Elks. That's how it felt all game long. And I was saying to Connor, even during the break, it was a weird night at the stadium. You know, not a lot of buzz. The team give the fans a reason to be cheering. And it was hazy and weird. 5 o'clock kickoff. Not a great night. Not a great night for Elks fans. It was just a weird evening at the stadium. That's the best way I would describe it. So, yeah, a lot of bad that game. A lot of bad.
You know, Tommy, look at the sequence at the end of the first half. You know, like, yeah. what was there? An interception, then, you know, okay, wasn't it? Then there was the penalty that was called on Armando Sewell because it wasn't, like, it felt so erratic. And, like, I was watching it. It feels to me like a team that really missed having a preseason. How would that be? Is that giving them too much credit, the Elks, that is?
Yeah, and Struz, it's like, okay, they're 0-2. It's a 14-game season this year. And can we say, are they shaking off the rust right now? Would have preseason have probably helped with that? Yeah, sure. But, or is this team just not up to snuff? Is it too early to say that? You would think, in theory, given the amount of CFL experience and really high-end CFL experience this team has in important positions, offensively, specifically, obviously, Harris, Ellingson, you've got Darrell Walker, who's back. James Wilder Jr., again, he's having a respectable start to his season. You would assume that they'd be able to get over the hump or pick up where they left off or adapt quickly, and that just doesn't seem to be happening right now. They put themselves into a hole. I guess the only other thing, though, is Calgary. If you look down south, they're just as bad right now, so... One of these teams is going to have to pick it up and in a hurry. And if you're an Edmonton person, you hope it's the Elks.
Is there anyone specific? Like, is it too much to put it on Trevor Harris?
I don't know if it's just on Harris. He took the fall, or he owned up to the loss in week one. You know, he didn't shy away from any of the blame game. Is it on Harris specifically because he's not executing, or is it on the play calling, whoever's running that side of it for the Elks? Is like, I don't know if it's just Trevor Harris. I think you got to spread the blame around. I wouldn't pinpoint just Harris himself.
Talking about Tom Gazzola for the Gazzola Chronicles. Tom, you know, eyebrows were raised when Lionel Messi left his club in Barcelona, but now you may have kind of unearthed why he, in fact, wasn't or isn't a part of that team anymore.
It's just absolutely crazy, Struds. Barcelona's $1.6 billion in debt. Like, that's unbelievable. And, like, Barcelona is like a global brand. Like the Yankees. Everybody knows the Yankees. Everyone knows the Cowboys, the Boston Red Sox. They're like a global brand. Soccer's huge across the world, obviously. And to see that they're $1.6 billion in the hole... is baffling, obviously. And then there was some, you know, a few articles are out about it, no doubt. But they're blaming the previous administration for the way the money was handled. Yes, we saw Messi, move on. He's going to be going to Paris now. And this was part of what was going on, is the money and financial situation is just, it's a mess there. But when I read that, I was like, are you kidding me? $1.6 Billy, and we know teams have losses, but usually it's poor performance, people not showing up, a string of bad seasons, and people being apathetic towards the team. This is not the case with Barcelona. And I know that, fans haven't been in the buildings in, some countries, even for soccer still. Just to me, given the strength and the recognition of the Barcelona brand, to see that this is how much money that they're in a hole, to me, is mind-blowing. Honestly, Struds, like, I think it's crazy.
Oh, it's unbelievable. When you think of that money, $1.6 billion, now it's a huge brand, and they're going to have to make some adjustment, because what were you – you called me earlier today, and you were talking like they're 102% of their salaries is what their income is. Like, it doesn't even make sense.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. You would think that they'd have the means to hire smart money people, or someone with their board would be like, listen, we're not doing – real good financially here. Our money management's terrible, to the point where you're $1.6 billion in the hole. It's nuts. I just think it's nuts that they put themselves into this position. And again, it's not a poor club that nobody knows about, that has been bad for a long time. All those traditional things that we know in the world of sports leads to financial ruin for sports teams in general. They don't have those issues, and here they are, $1.6 bill in the red. It's nuts. It's absolutely insane.
Love this text. Hey, how the hell does the bank or creditors let you get $1.6 billion in debt? Wow, from Champ. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's special when you're Barcelona. Now, growing up, I love collecting hockey cards, and I still have a ton. I've got a ton of sports cards all over the place. You know, Wayne Gretzky rookie and Marilyn, but there's a couple I'd really love to have because, man, the price of some of those extra valuable ones are rocketing, Tommy.
Yeah, and obviously the most famous sports card of all time is the Honus Wagner, and it just sold for a record, Struds, $6.6 million.
Jeez.
And you know, if people don't really know the story of the Honus Wagner baseball card, they came in cigarette packages or tobacco packages, and he wanted the company to stop producing his card because he wasn't, A, getting a cut or something to do with – there's a discussion. He wasn't getting enough of a cut, or he didn't want kids buying tobacco. One or the other, right? That's the lore behind why Honus Wagner told them they couldn't produce his card anymore and distribute it. So – this card sells for $6.6 million. Wayne Gretzky owned one of these cards. There's only a few of them left in the world. I remember going to see one at the New York Public Library because they put it on display. They have one of the few remaining ones in good shape. It was unbelievable, and it's just a little card. This thing actually, Struds, sold for $1,000 back in 1973. And they asked the guy who first bought it for $1,000 and then sold it the next year for $2,500, what he thinks. And he says, you know, he would like to have it back, obviously, especially with how much money it's garnered at auctions, especially most recently here at $6.6 million.
Jeez.
But he says he's just proud to be a part of its history, and the card collecting game wasn't like it is now. But it's just insane to see this card sell for that much money.
It's unbelievable, and it's so funny. I remember going. I used to go to this place on Stony Plain Road, and I don't know if anyone knows. It's around, like, I'm gonna call it around 150th Street, right on Stony Plain Road. And my dad would take me Saturday mornings, and he had collectible, like, so he had hot, like, sports car collectibles, and then all kind of military stuff. So I'd go down there, and I'd go in the basement. And just my dad would wait in the car. He's like, you just go. Here's whatever, $20. And I would grind this guy. Like, I'm not talking about, like, dollar. Like, if the card was a dollar, I wouldn't be like, oh, can I have – or if it was $2, I'd say, can I have a dollar? I'd grind the guy, like, can I have it for $1.80? Can I have it for, like, $1.65? Like, because I wanted to get more and more cards. And it was such a great thing. And you go to grad sales and grab a whole trunk full of cards from someone who didn't want it anymore. Like, the collectors was so much fun. Now, I never ran across that. But it's so much fun to collect those cards. And now I'm trying to get my kids into it a little bit different. You know, it's a little bit more, you know, it's about a little bit more about the money now. There's so many different cards, but man, back at the start, it was so awesome. I absolutely loved it.
I always collected cards too, but I wouldn't have the gusto to try to talk a guy down, barter him at a card shop. That's just, I admire that, Struds, especially when you were a kid doing it. And like Pokemon cards now are ridiculous. Like you could, I think there's one card that's worth $1 million. I think it's a Charizard card or something like that.
Right.
And I heard that. I'm like, you got to be out of your mind. Are you serious? They're worth that much. And so my brothers and I went to my parents' place to look for all their old Pokemon cards. I don't think they ended up finding them, but we did find my old hockey cards. And I found a Willie O'Ree card that I got from, I think, the early 2000s. And he was at NHL Breakout, the street hockey tournament. He was kind of a guest. And I got him to sign it. So I'm wondering if that ever ends up being worth anything. But I forgot I even had it. It's neat what you find when you go through your old boxes like that.
Oh, yeah. It is. It's such a treat. And like I said, I have mine all put away. And the kids want to touch them. Like, yeah, no. You can touch these ones over here. Don't touch my nice ones. Like these are the nice ones on the other side. So absolutely awesome. Tommy, thanks a lot, buddy. And we'll get to, I'm sure, some more Elks talk as we work our way through the week. What's your NFL team again?
Arizona Cardinals.
Hmm.
That's my team, Strutty.
They've got a nice quarterback there, don't they?
Yeah, Kyler Murray, QB1, baby.
Yeah, he's got to be one of the highest fantasy drafted quarterbacks, I think, isn't he?
He should be up there. I mean, I'm not a huge fantasy guy because I'm terrible at it, but I actually think this team's going to be good this year, really. Picking up J.J. Watt was excellent, obviously, and they already have a bunch of great offensive weapons. So I'm hoping for a big season from AZ. I know they're in a tough division, but we shall see, my friend. We shall see.
Well maybe we'll get them. We'll get a guest on that for tomorrow. Break it down so we can hear the truth, not from a fan's lips, but from a non-biased fan's lips.
I love it, Struds. I love it.
Thanks, buddy. Talk to you later.
Sounds good. See you tomorrow.